There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the latest weekend sports talk with the Dopey Millennials Show.
Dump the old ish, upgrade to the new.
From Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you going until 4:30. We'll hand things off to Mr. John Fricke. We'll do a pregame for Hawks and Pacers. Thanks to Brad Rowland for joining the show last segment. If you missed that conversation, use that rewind function on the Odyssey app. And if you're not listening on the Odyssey app, you can go to the Odyssey app, hit that rewind function, and have the ability to go listen. Brad always does locked in, and it seems like we are, at any moment, could be expecting a trade for the Hawks. Most likely, Bogey Bogdanovich and or Clint Capela. Brad actually had the opinion that I was kind of surprised to hear, because I have felt a bit different, that it feels very unlikely we see both of those guys dealt just because of the money, but Brad said certainly possible, and I guess that it is. It's just one of those, now we play the waiting game of when is it going to happen. All right, before I get into the conversation that I wanted to have this segment, I got something that I'm going to throw up on Twitter. So if you don't follow me on Twitter, hit me up, ATLJohnson18, of course, the radio station, as always, 929 The Game, but something that I'll do at the end of my show, every Dopey Millennial show, I end by giving out participation trophies. I'm a Dopey Millennial. Haha. We get made fun of for being given participation trophies growing up, playing sports, all of those sorts of things. And so I give participation trophies at the end of my show to people deserving and undeserving of whatever they might have been involved with that week. Well, my parents have moved recently, and so I got a bunch of my stuff from their house as they moved out. That was like, hey, this is your responsibility now. It's like, oh, man, this is a lot of stuff that I don't want to have to keep up with. But amongst those things was a tote full of trophies from when I was younger. And now amongst those trophies, I found, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 participation trophies. Five. Looks like one from a camp that I went to, two from when I played youth soccer, and two from when I played youth t-ball. Now, when I was looking at them, there are certain trophies, like it's funny, I had a bunch of like third place karate trophies, or like second place, church youth conference things that I competed in, that I was like, oh, those are easy. Like, I'm getting rid of those. No problem. Not a second thought. However, the participation trophies that I've got, from the one aspect of it's just funny because, you know, I talk about it on my show. But then the second aspect of these are the oldest trophies that I own. Like, you're not giving a kid first, second, or third when he's four kicking around a soccer ball. But sure, when he's seven and he's actually competing, that's a different thing. So I'm going to put it up. I just hit send on Twitter. ATL Johnson 18. You can hit me up on there. Let me know, should I throw these participation trophies away or should I keep them? Because like I said, this is from early years of my childhood. I won't say the dates because most of you know that, yes, I am on the younger end. I'm not nearly as young as I used to feel. I definitely feel a lot older these days. But participation trophies is one of those. I, as future parents someday, knowing that, like, I don't want my kids having participation trophies. But then in the retrospect, it's like, but that's from, like, a number of years ago. I don't want to date myself. But, I'm trying to decide. I have great memories of playing soccer. I also have photos of when I played soccer, like little, nice headshots. I'm holding my knee, that whole bit. So I'm trying to decide, do I keep the participation trophies from T-ball and youth soccer early days of Caleb, or do I get rid of them? So that's I'll get your reactions later in the show, and then obviously I'll hand out participation trophies at the end. We'll see whether or not you guys think I should keep them or throw them away. All right, here's what I wanted to get into. I teased you guys with the fact of there is a simple fix that the NFL Pro Bowl needs to make, and no, it is not the games itself. Those are lost. Those are done. Those are never coming back. It's a moot point in this stage. Like we're never getting tackle football. Oh, great, incredible NFL Pro Bowl games ever again. I got to see the last of the tackle versions, quote unquote tackle versions, when I would go down to Orlando and cover them, because it's a great opportunity for a young journalist to get to talk to these players. But we're past that point. We do have a massive problem that's always been an issue, but it's become increasingly more glaring in the last couple of years, and it's really reared its head this year, even though I really think the problem was 2023 is when it went too far. We've got to separate Pro Bowl participants from Pro Bowl selections. Here's what I mean. When the Pro Bowl comes out every year, we are voting on the NFL's best players, all right? Best quarterbacks in each conference, wide receivers, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, all the skill positions, secondary, all of it. But then, as happens every year, you have the one aspect of, hey, these guys are going to be playing in the Super Bowl. Obviously, they can't play in the Pro Bowl. But then you get into injuries. And injury reasonings have become less and less serious, although I will attest that it's always been a problem. But when you get to a point where 2 years ago, Snoop Huntley was a Pro Bowler, after he was playing for the injured Lamar Jackson, the man threw 3 touchdowns in 5 games and was a Pro Bowler. Then you've got this year, Drake May as a rookie. You got Brian Thomas Jr. down in Jacksonville. I saw a couple of other wide receivers who made this list of Pro Bowlers, even though it's really like, hey, the actual Pro Bowlers are making themselves unavailable or they have an injury. But when you're kicking around and you're like, yeah, Russell Wilson, let's make him a Pro Bowler. They wanted to, good grief, blanking on his name, up in Denver. They wanted to make him a Pro Bowler. Bo Nix, but he's having a shoulder cleanup. Some kind of surgery. So you got rookies at this point turning down the opportunity because it's like, yeah, I gotta get my shoulder fixed for next season. That is because the actual games themselves don't mean anything. The NFL just wants some players out there to participate. Easy fix, NFL. You make NFL Pro Bowlers, then you make a separate NFL Pro Bowl participants. It's a very easy thing to do, and I think it will save us a lot of frustration of Snoop Huntley and Drake May, amongst others, being listed. Because the quarterbacks are the ones that really get you of the like, oh, good grief. Russell Wilson, what are we doing? But the other, it goes into the other positions as well. It's just those don't get nearly the amount of attention that quarterbacks do. All right, here's the other thing. Actually, 10 minutes, we're 10 minutes away from having a conversation with our old buddy Thomas Mott, who covers the Philadelphia Eagles for his YouTube show. It's very, very successful as they get ready to play in the Super Bowl in a little over a week. This is our last week of football. Like, have we come to terms with that? Because it always does. It always sneaks up. We're like, man, I'm loving it. We finally got to the playoffs. Incredible. Then those conference championship games happen. And it's like, wait. College national championship is done. Conference championships are done. We got one more. Because we don't even get an NFL Pro Bowl game. We already discussed. It's long gone. We've got 1 week left. One game left of football. And I feel like the upcoming week for all the media discussions, there's only two things to talk about. And I'm very curious when we get to have that conversation with Thomas coming up in about 9 minutes from now of what is there going to be to discuss outside of Kansas City Chiefs three-peat and then what's happening with Kellen Moore. Because the Kellen Moore thing is going to be quick. They're going to go to that man just like I was at the podium when Al Golden was there representing the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Hey, Al, you know, NFL teams are going to come calling. You looking to make that transition? And he does the very responsible thing. Hey, this week, you know, this time is focused on our players and who we've got and what we've got coming ahead. Those conversations will happen once our season is over. I expect Kellen Moore is going to do the same exact thing. Although, I will say, Kellen Moore has the opportunity to do the funniest thing ever for Falcons fans. Like, the Saints have been calling all of their other interested parties, which weren't that many names, because people kept saying, no, not interested, no, not interested, no, not interested. Kellen Moore could do the funniest thing ever for Falcons fans and go, yeah, actually, I think I'm going to stick with Philadelphia for a little bit and look at maybe a different job in the future. Because could you imagine Saints having to call those other candidates back? I would find it absolutely hilarious. They had to make those, hey, so, you know, on second look of your resume, we think, you know, you could be the future head coach of the New Orleans Saints. Now, it seems like that's locked up for Kellen Moore to take that job. But outside of him potentially taking that job and the three-peat, what are we going to talk about? A.J. Brown's book again? Feels like we beat that story to death. There's no Kelce brothers playing against each other, although you know Jason's going to show up. I love the guy, but he kind of tends to make things about himself. That's part of the whole shtick of why he's on NFL Countdown, why he's got his own show with ESPN. Things become a lot about him, which is fine. Love the podcast that he and Travis are doing. But you don't have that storyline of those guys playing against each other. You got the three-peat, and then whatever's going to happen with Kellen Moore. I am very interested to see what storylines, if any, besides those, come out of Super Bowl Media Week, because We got one game, and that's it. And then we're all cradled in the corner going, it'll come back soon. It'll come back soon. All right, when we return, Thomas Mott, who covers the Philadelphia Eagles, old friend of not only me, but here at 92.9 The Game, is going to break down what the Eagles can do to prevent a three-peat from happening with the Kansas City Chiefs. All coming up next right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back to the latest weekend sports talk with the Dopey Millennial Show.
Dump the old ish, upgrade to the new.
From Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Saturday as we go until 4:30 ahead of pregame for Hawks and Pacers. Hawks hopefully able to break a 7-game losing streak tonight, but I'll be honest with you, don't feel very optimistic. And talking with Brad Rowland earlier in the show, it didn't feel like he was very optimistic either. However, isn't that often when the Hawks really surprise us and beat a team like they have with Boston or Cleveland or New York? Feels like just you underestimate them and then they'll show up, and hopefully they can do so, just because you never want to have a big losing streak going. I know the Wizards have, what, 16 games I think they've lost consecutively at this point. You never want to find yourself in that Pistons area that Detroit was last season and that sort of thing. But hopefully they can turn it around tonight. However, continuing with the conversation of this being our last week, going into our last week of football, I wanted to bring an old friend of not only 92.9 The Game, but of myself, Thomas Mott, who has the Thomas Mott Show on YouTube, as well as you can follow him on social media at Real Thomas Mott. He covers all things Philadelphia Eagles. Thomas is on the WaitForIt.com hotline. And Thomas, just first off, how you been lately, man? I know you're a big married man now and all those sorts of things. You doing well?
Yeah, a lot of life changes. Fun to be back on 92.9. Fun listening to you this afternoon. And pretty fun being somebody who covers the Philadelphia Eagles when they go to a Super Bowl in a season. So yeah. I can't complain right now.
It must be nice. Must be nice to have a team second time in 3 years. They're in the Super Bowl. However, this time around, Thomas, I was talking about this last segment, that feels like the storylines for this year's Super Bowl, there's two. It is, hey, are the Chiefs going to three-peat, or it's a, do you want to discuss whether Kellen Moore is going to potentially take the New Orleans Saints job? Like, what do the Eagles have to do this upcoming week to steal some attention away during Super Bowl week?
Yeah, well, first off, on the whole Kellen Moore offensive coordinator situation, he's going to be the Saints head coach. That's all but guaranteed. Okay. They can't make it official till after the Super Bowl, but yeah, that's a closet handshake and a little wink, but basically away from being official. So that's one narrative going into this, Josh. Caleb, I was with Wells earlier. The big narrative for Philadelphia right now is trying to get revenge on the Kansas City Chiefs, because 2 years ago, you remember that Super Bowl, Philly was up at halftime. They were feeling great. Jalen Hurts outdueled Patrick Mahomes statistically. He would have won MVP of that Super Bowl had, things gone the right way. And then in the end, defensive collapse. Mahomes does his thing, and they come back and win. And so three-peat is definitely on the national media's mind. In Philadelphia, it's getting revenge and proving that they've been the best team all season long, which a lot of Eagle fans believe that they have been.
Thomas, how is this team different than that one 2 years ago? Outside of the obvious, you're going to change a couple of players here and there. There is no Jason Kelce this time around, that sort of thing. But just as far as what could make a difference here, how is this version of the Eagles different than that team?
Well, I think obviously Saquon Barkley, that's the easy answer. Philadelphia had 7 carries from their lead running back in that last Super Bowl. Miles Sanders, the first time he touched the football, fumbled it out of bounds, and then only had 6 more carries after that. So Jalen Hurts was their leading rusher in a game that they almost won, which is wild. So obviously Saquon, but put him aside, the big difference between the 2022 Eagles and the 2024 Eagles is their defense. Now, if you go on paper, the 2022 Eagles led the league in sacks. They had like 73 sacks, almost broke the NFL record, but their secondary was not very good. It was very much protected by the front four of Philadelphia. This year's Eagles, though, front four, not as many sacks. They're a lot younger, though. And, of course, Georgia Bulldog fan understand how great Jalen Carter not only was at Georgia, but is this year. Biggest difference? Secondary. The Burt secondary is one of the best in the National Football League, and it's going to be the best secondary Mahomes has faced in a pretty long time because he didn't play in that Week 18 finale versus Denver, who also has a good secondary.
Thomas, I guess the other part of this is you mentioned the rushing aspect side of things. I saw this stat that Steve Spagnuolo's defense in the playoffs hasn't allowed a rusher to go over 100 yards. For Saquon to be the difference maker that he has been this season for the Eagles, how does Philly change that fortune and get something up against Spags?
Well, it helps whenever you have maybe the best running back season of any running back in the last 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, however you want to say it, in Saquon Barkley. So that obviously covers a multitude of sins. Big factor, though, this week that all Eagle fans are watching in terms of the running game is the help of the interior offensive line, because Cam Jurgens, their usual center, he's the Jason Kelce replacement. He's been fantastic. Dealing with a back injury, did not start last week in the NFC title game. Landon Dickerson, the former Bama center, who is a all-world guard for the Eagles, started instead. He got hurt with a knee halfway through that game. Cam Jurgens came in like an emergency reserve situation and finished that game out and played pretty well. Both have not practiced, at least this week. Obviously, there's 2 weeks between the end of the NFC title game and the Super Bowl, and so we're expecting them to practice next week. But Philadelphia's offensive line has been a massive factor in Saquon Barkley being able to do what he can do. And as long as they're healthy, I would definitely probably bet that they're going to go ahead and rush for 100-plus yards on Spags' defense, as great as it is.
Talking with Thomas Mott on the WadeFord.com hotline. You can look up Thomas's show on YouTube, the Thomas Mott Show, as well as follow him on social media at Real Thomas Mott. Talks all things Philadelphia Eagles. Now, Thomas, obviously, beginning of the season, Falcons are feeling pretty good after that matchup with Philly. Of course, Saquon has the drop. Then you've got Kirk leading on the legendary run that certainly didn't last, for Atlanta side of things. Are you a believer in this Kirk Cousins curse that I did not realize was a thing until I saw it discussed the last couple of days?
I honestly did not know about it either until one of my subscribers pointed it out during one of our live shows last week. It's like since 2016, if you lose to Kirk Cousins, it's a 0% chance of winning the Super Bowl. And a lot of the good teams, like the Niners a couple of years ago, whenever they made it versus the Chiefs, they had lost to Kirk Cousins in that season. So I am hopefully not a believer in that curse. There's also a whole white jersey versus home jersey thing where the white jerseys have been much better. Let's hope not, right? We can go back. I mean, I know we're in Atlanta right now. That Falcons game was a massive turning point for the Philadelphia Eagles because they had a great opening night in Green Bay, down in Brazil. Everyone's super excited, and then obviously they come back and lose to the Falcons. And I really thought Atlanta was going to go on a little run there, and obviously, they didn't. Kind of a Falcon-esque finish to the NFL season. That was a big turning point for Philadelphia and helped them a bunch. So I'm hoping the Kirk Cousins curse dies, 8 days from now in New Orleans, but he's been pretty strong with it the past few years, so we'll see.
That was I saw the caveat. It apparently changed last year because the curse was that you didn't even make it to the Super Bowl if you lost to Kirk Cousins in the regular season. But then last year, the 49ers obviously are able to do that, so they changed things. And yeah, you're right. Maybe things change again, and a team can lose to Kirk Cousins in the regular season and win the Super Bowl. All right. When it comes to Kellen Moore and his importance to Philadelphia, obviously, if he does, as it seems, going to go take the New Orleans job, that's going to be, next year, fourth offensive coordinator in 4 seasons for Philly.
Yeah.
What kind of impact has Kellen made on this team, and do you see it as being any kind of a big loss if he ends up, as it seems, potentially going to take that New Orleans job?
It's interesting. Philadelphia goes on this massive win streak during the middle of the season, and yet all the talk in the national media is, the Eagle offense, the passing game, not that great. Jalen Hurts is averaging 190 yards throwing. Even into the postseason, there was a lot of criticism around Kellen Moore in the Rams game because Philadelphia didn't throw the football that well, and they almost blew it late in the fourth quarter. And then last week, NFC Championship game, goodness gracious, it was Jalen Hurts, I think, best game as a pro this season. He was fantastic. They threw the ball all over the field, 258 yards behind Jalen Hurts' right arm. And so It's a factor. You know, if you go back to 2022, the Eagles had the same situation. They make the Super Bowl, they lose both coordinators, and then they bring in two very inexperienced guys who had never been offensive or defensive coordinators, and they paid the price. They got outed in the first round by the Bucs, and this year they brought in a lot more experience in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, and you've seen the adjustments there. So it's nothing new when they lose Kellen Moore, because it is virtually inevitable, but it's tough. I mean, Jalen Hurts has not had back-to-back seasons with the same offensive coordinator any year in the league except for the 2 years that Shane Steichen was in Philadelphia. So they have a list of candidates that they're deep into the vetting process because they fully believe that this is going to happen. But I would keep an eye on a guy like Frank Reich, who was a former OC, obviously in Philadelphia, pre-Jalen Hurts, and could be an option to come back. But Kellen Moore is going to take that Saints job. I'm sure they're going to give him a ton of guaranteed money and a bunch of guaranteed years because, as all Atlanta fans know, the Saints are in cap hell this year, and they don't like Derek Carr. And so they got to give him enough money to get him out of Philly, and I think that they're going to.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is just how bad do you really – being an outsider, because it's easy for Falcons fan to be like, oh yeah, that's a terrible job. You certainly don't want to take it, especially the names that have come out that have politely declined, that sort of thing.
Right.
How bad of a job do you really think that is for Kellen to make this his first opportunity,
It's really a bad job for 2025. And then after 2025, you can get out of the Derek Carr contract, and you can start to kind of rebuild these things. And I've had plenty of Eagle fans, you know, basically ask the same question: why would Kellen Moore want to leave this job? And honestly, the best answer that I can give you is money, and the guaranteed money of being a head coach versus the guaranteed money of being an offensive coordinator. Kellen Moore is the third highest paid offensive coordinator in the entire league right now. He only makes $2.5 million, which for you and me is a ton of money.
Sure.
But for an OC, it's like, I mean, that's not a lot compared to a 5-year, $10 million contract, a 10-year, $10 million contract. You know, and I think he has all the leverage going to New Orleans and saying, you guys have nobody else, so give me a bunch of guaranteed money, guarantee me that I'm not going to be fired in the next couple of years, and let me slowly rebuild this thing, because they have a decent core. I mean, obviously the cap is a massive issue. It's not going to get fixed in 2025, but I think most head coaches like to get into a bad organization, kind of just ride the wave for the first year, gut it after year one, and then really get your own people in there. So it's going to be a slow rebuild, but I genuinely think that the fear of there being less openings in 2025 plus the guaranteed money is enough to get him out of Philadelphia.
Talking with Thomas Mott on the WadeFord.com hotline. You can look up Thomas Mott on YouTube. He's got the Thomas Mott Show, where he talks all things Philadelphia Eagles. And when it comes to Philly, you mentioned the offensive line being, you know, a potential aspect of injuries and that sort of thing. I saw Brandon Graham, you know, potential of his return maybe being a thing. What type of impact player do you see him, and is there any other injuries that really kind of concern you when it comes to Philly?
Yeah, so Brandon Graham is the only one, and Brandon Graham is going to play in the Super Bowl. They have not announced that yet, but he was activated to the 21-day practice window on Wednesday. He's practiced the past 2 days. He's had full pads on and is doing contact on the injured tricep, which he tore week 11, week 12 versus the Rams. So it's a short turnaround for how long injured triceps take, but they can put that sort of brace on. It's the exact same situation that Ray Lewis, the Ravens linebacker, had many years ago in that Super Bowl. He tore his tricep the night before and still was technically able to play. So BG is not going to be 100%. He'll be pretty close, but Philadelphia is not going to take reps away from the young pass rusher out of Georgia and Nolan Smith, who is been unbelievable over the course of the past 3 months. The guy leads the team in sacks. He has the most sacks in a single Eagles playoff franchise history with 4.5 over the past 3 weeks. He's getting like 80% of the edge rusher snaps right now, and he's going to keep getting 80%. Brandon Graham is going to slide in kind of just below him in a very small rotational amount. I'm thinking 10 to 20 snaps in the Super Bowl, depending on how his lungs are, because that's the main issue in terms of not just the tricep, but being in football shape.
Sure.
And so he's going to play. He's obviously a legend in Philadelphia. He's going to get everything he got. But those young Georgia players that Eagles GM Howie Roseman drafted over the past couple of years have really blossomed and become the superstars that are going to be needed to make sure Patrick Mahomes doesn't run around on that defense and throw for 300 yards and win a third straight Super Bowl.
Well, that's what it's what a lot of us are voting for, is trying to prevent a three-peat. Thomas, appreciate you joining the show, and we'll talk soon, man.
Hey, man, it's fun listening to you. Best of luck the rest of the day, and we'll see if these Georgia Bulldogs can get a Super Bowl ring next week.
All right, there we go. When we get back on the Dopey Millennial Show, we're going to do a fun producer segment. I used to be a producer for Thomas Mott here on the station, and going to have Noel ask the Dopey. Going to do a few questions with producer Noel, I should say, when we get back on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Up the old ish, upgrade to
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you for a couple more hours. You know, I'm in the studio here in the Kia Studios. We've got a couple TVs on, just random games on. There's literally a hockey game on. And then also Auburn, who is at Ole Miss men's college basketball. I just watched the ESPN cameras do one of the most dangerous, is probably calling it the wrong word, but one of the most ill-advised things you could do, which is putting a camera on someone in the crowd for an extended amount of time who does not know the camera is on them. Now, it is apparent, without me having sound, that during this Auburn-Ole Miss game, that this woman who is an usher at the Ole Miss game must have some sort of significance to the game, whether it's players, whether she's worked there a long time, whatever might be the case. But I noticed they put the camera on her, put a little lower third and put her name and that, all that sort of thing. And I saw her and I got really concerned. She started scratching her face. She started scratching her face. She started going over towards the nose area, and then she puts her hand down. I'm thinking to myself, you know, dangerous territory, because what I would hate to have happen is for a very innocent usher working a basketball game to do a little nose picking, nose scratch, or anything else that could be embarrassing. A yawn. So I'm just like, I have no idea what the story was that they were talking about on ESPN for this Auburn-Ole Miss game. But putting a camera, especially on a employee, someone who was working the game, they've probably been there a long time. They're probably tired. They're focused on doing their job. I am very glad that there was no nose picking or yawning or anything else that might have been embarrassing, because they left the camera on her for an incredibly long amount of time. All right, there's enough of my random spiel of seeing things on TV here in the Kia Studios. I want to bring in now our producer, Noel White, who has had an incredibly long day, is in the home stretch of her 12-hour shift that she's been working today, or I guess will have once this day is over with. And so I feel bad a little bit that I've asked Noel to do extra work. But as I mentioned last segment, got to bring in Thomas Mott on the show. I was a producer for Thomas a few years ago when he worked here at the station. And I always like to incorporate producers on my show just because, I mean, you guys have opinions too, just as much as I do. So without any further ado, I'm turning things over to Noel White for Ask the Dopey. What you got going on today, Noel?
All right. We will start in your wheelhouse.
Alrighty.
What should the Hawks do for the rest of the season?
I guess what they have been doing, which is not the fun answer. Like, I think we talked a little bit about this with Brad Rowland earlier. At the deadline, they should absolutely move off of Bogey Bogdanovich and Clint Capella. Not because I don't think Bogey's a good player, but when things get to the point of, hey, we're just going to have you stay away from the team right now, that's not ever good. And working your relationship back to playing again feels like it's in the best interest of everyone if you just move on. I have no inside information as of this point as to whether or not this was something that, you know, Bogey was being a bad teammate. I don't think anything like that. I just think Bogey's been going through struggles. the Hawks looking to move him. And it seems, you know, that the decision has been made. Hey, why don't you just go ahead, stay away from the team right now, stay healthy, and we'll try to move you on to a different situation as we try to clear up cap space and plan for our future and all of those sorts of things. Now, all of this happens because of the Jalen Johnson injury, I think, in large part, but it was kind of headed this way anyways. Like, the big deciding factor was that West Coast road trip that the team took in January that went horribly wrong for the most part.
What was that, 1-4?
Yeah, and it really kind of showed that, like, okay, the NBA Cup thing was fun. It showed the potential of this team, but this team still has a ways to go. So there's no reason to just play this thing out with who you have. Just for the sake of making the playoffs, like, let's plan towards the future. In the same respect, though, Noel, this team is, as we talked with Brad about, they are not tanking at all. They're not going to try to tank. They are going to try to win games. A, because they have Trae Young. And I firmly believe when Trae says, I want to win games, like, he is not in the business of losing games just to be losing because it's going to help the team, because it's not going to help the team. Because the San Antonio Spurs own their first-round pick. Exactly. So they're in the awkward predicament of develop Zachary Risache and any of their other young talent, Onyeka Okongwu being a big part of that. Because this is finding out. Caleb, I don't believe, me personally, I don't believe that Onyeka is a starting center in the NBA. I think he's a reserve. That is my opinion. Just be based on, and I know it kind of gets back to the days of Al Horford, but there is something to the effect of you just don't have the size to play on a consistent basis that starting role. But this is his opportunity to tell me I'm incredibly wrong and I don't know what I'm talking about. To develop over the course of this season. Develop Onyeka, develop Zach, and then get something for your future, whether that's a player or most likely it's picks.
All right, we're going to stay in a basketball wheelhouse. Are you surprised to see the Dream in the middle of free agent action right now?
I'm not surprised. I was surprised by the names. Like, that was more of it. As I was like, oh, okay. Like, you go get Brittany Griner. You go get Breonna Jones. It's like...
Made another signing this afternoon.
Did they?
Brought in a shooting guard.
Okay. Who'd they get?
They got one moment.
Oh, see, I put you on the spot. But I think...
Walker Kimbrough out of Washington Mystics.
Okay. That name doesn't, like, jump off the page at me.
Yeah,
but...
she's a nice utility piece, a shooting guard. She'll probably be behind Alicia.
Okay. I think obviously the big pieces, though, are going to get Brittany Griner.
Yeah.
And Breonna Jones. Yeah. That is one of those. Now, you know, I always start any W conversation with I am in no way, shape, or form an expert on the league. I am merely a fan of the league. I get league pass. I pop in. I watch Dream games, that sort of thing. But seeing my frustrations of this team of, like, there is so much potential there, and yet, you know, you clearly need more to add depth to this team, but also... big pieces around Ryan Howard and Alicia Gray. And so doing that, I believe, you know, going to get a Griner, going to get a Breonna Jones certainly makes them more interesting just to watch in general because, hey, people talk about they want to see dunking in the W. Well, Atlanta's going to have that with Griner, that ability for sure. And obviously just she's a physical presence down in the paint. Here's the other aspect that has surprised me more of not keeping up with the league as a whole, more so I just pay attention to Atlanta, is Connecticut blowing it
right
up.
Blew it up.
I mean, they just said,
everybody,
hey,
got a piece of Connecticut this offseason.
They said, we're having a yard sale. You give us an offer and we'll probably say yes to whatever that offer is. Like, we're shipping people left and right out of town. I texted from friends of mine who are obviously much more, they pay attention to the league a lot more closely. And I guess it is given the fact that Connecticut has been so close to winning a championship, but it's just like, it just doesn't happen year after year, that they're finally like, yeah, we're just going to go plan for the future now and trade all of our big pieces away or let them go in free agency. And so, yeah, that's one of those. Seems like Atlanta on the rise. Connecticut certainly in a position where maybe not tanking, but they're certainly not going to be good because they've traded everybody away. But
everybody,
I'm excited.
But
yeah. I'm excited for Atlanta's season, honestly, though, just because this brings another added exciting element on top of, you know, whoever. I don't. Where are they picking in the draft?
They don't have a pick this year.
So if they traded
this pick away to get Jordan Canada in here.
Okay. All right. So you don't have that aspect to look forward to. But Griner and Breonna Jones certainly add something to, you know, to get butts in seats and to get people to pay attention.
I mean, you had to scrimp and scrape to get into that eighth seed spot to get into the playoffs. And then you were promptly booted out of there.
Yeah.
So this
we knew that was happening as soon as you had to play New York.
You really did. Like, so this shows that you're trying to get over that hump. And even though they've changed the format now, which I knew was going to happen, but they changed the format now to where you'll get a home game even as in the first round. But you needed to get over that hump to bring some excitement back home.
Yeah.
Like, at least to be at least let your fans be able to see you play a playoff game even if you lose it.
Sure.
We didn't have that last season, so they should be able to compete is what I'm saying. You got a huge front court now, a front court with a lot of talent. You already had a back court with a lot of talent. Ryan Howard can do anything you ask her to, really, at this point. Guard 1-4, can shoot at three levels. It's insane what Ryan Howard can do. And it's insane what I've seen her and Alicia do in Unrivaled. Have you seen any of the Unrivaled this season?
I have. All right. Now, I have to be the person who says it from this aspect. When it comes to Unrivaled, I feel like social media has done a much better job of marketing Unrivaled than Unrivaled has done of marketing Unrivaled. I knew what this league was going to be going into it, but it wasn't until people started watching games and I was seeing it come up on my social media feeds that I was like, oh, okay. I feel like I never know when games are going to happen.
I have that issue too. Like, I guess like the ESPNs and the Yahoo Sports of the world haven't gravitated towards them yet to be able to just go on the app and see when they play. It's a little harder to figure out what the schedule is. So I've missed a couple games just off that aspect myself.
I feel like I'm always catching it after the fact. Like, it's one of those, you know, oh, okay, like that was cool to see that clip later on kind of thing. So I'm one of those that I feel like I would like the league, and maybe this is just me being insulated and I don't watch as much of just like live TV. But I feel like I'm in a lot of places where they could absolutely advertise to me as a consumer. And I, you know, I feel like I don't really see that. But here's the other thing, too. This is a little personal. Like, I think something smart that TGL, the golf league that Tiger Woods started, did that was smart that I feel like Unrivaled could have done. And if they are, I'm missing it entirely. They're not connected to cities. Teams aren't, are they?
No, they're not. They're just all set in Miami.
Yeah,
so they have no like connection to any city or anything.
I feel
like the golf term, the digital golf.
Yeah,
I've seen some of that, and then they have like Atlanta teams and these
teams
and that.
So,
teams.
So they like there was something to be said because it happens in college sports. You cheer for your team because that's where you went to school, or I'm an Atlanta fan, so I'm going to cheer for Atlanta's teams. You know, I did that when they had the Spring Football League where Atlanta had a team, the Atlanta Legends. Now you've got and now I can't even think of Atlanta's team in the TGL. But Atlanta has a team.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them. They're real Atlanta, too.
Yeah, Well, that was the thing. They did. They embraced the city. They had the Dirty Bird chain. So that is one aspect of Unrivaled that I think could really help the game is associate your teams with cities, even if they're not, because TGL is just playing in Florida.
Right.
People just playing in Miami. Like, you could still be associated with cities so that fans could go, like, I'm going to go cheer for that team because that's my city. Or you have the option of, hey, I like that player, so I'm going to go root for that team. It's just a...
Well, I think that's what they've been pushing this go-around. Like, that's that player or whatever. So, like, the people of the... But to your point, if you want to kind of expand outside of people that are already W fans, that would be a great way to do it, to just, you know, put a city on it.
Yeah. All right. When we get back on the Dopey Millennial Show, I want to do a check the tape segment. Listen to some audio. Jarvis Davis was on Dukes and Bell yesterday. He had some great things to talk about the Senior Bowl. It's going down in Mobile this weekend. What Falcons fans can be looking at when it comes to potential additions in the draft. As well as I've got some cuts from Jeff Ulbrich, new defensive coordinator for the Falcons. I'll give you my thoughts on what I see as him being a realistic option to help turn around this Falcons defense in 2025. It's all coming up next on the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 99.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.